It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast. Good to be with you on a Wednesday. Week one of the NFL season. Man, it hit home during the pregame show on Sunday. Like, this is already... This feels like the season premiere of a new season of Game of Thrones, where it's like, holy crap, we've had 3 field battles and we've got 5 new storylines right now. Like, it was a wild week one, man, both on the field and off the field. So just taking the drama inventory from week one, we'll start with the on the field stuff. We've had 4 primetime games: Thursday, Friday, Sunday, and Monday. And the one on Monday was the one I was most looking forward to because of the Aaron Rodgers return and going to play San Francisco. That ended up being the least compelling of all the games. And yet, even that, we got a storyline out of it with this Christian McCaffrey injury, which we don't know how long he's going to be out for. So we did get that out of the Monday night game. But the other 3 games all had really compelling things happening. Yeah. Literally at the end of the game. We'll start with Thursday. Just to relive week one here, the Lively kid from Coastal Carolina, the tight end, the backup tight end to Mark Andrews.
Isaiah Lively.
Yeah. Isaiah Lively, yes. Or Likely. Almost.
Yeah, thank you. I wrote Lively. It's Isaiah, I think.
It's
like,
Isaiah.
Oh, yeah, Likely.
Yeah, it's Isaiah Likely. Yeah, my bad. We'll let the announcers do the rest here.
Shotgun snap. He moves up in the pocket. Right tackle block. He runs around in a circle. Cocks his arm. Throws in the end zone. It's caught in the back of the end zone with the feet down. Likely got it. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Baltimore! Likely! Back of the end zone. And a leap holds it down.
So that was Kevin Harlan on the call. I hadn't heard the
boy,
Kevin
Harlan, man. I was kind of critical of Tirico for being emphatic and calling it a touchdown. Without question. And you know, the officials immediately called it a touchdown. Boy, Harlan was 3 times more over the top than Tirico was on that one.
I think the probably broadcasting 101 is you call it like it's a touchdown. In case it is, then you...
Well, especially when the official is giving good call. Good call there. But my emotional side of me was like, you guys duped me.
Yeah.
You duped me into believing it was a touchdown. And then... It ended up being, it caused more, I guess, controversy than it should have, mostly because it wasn't until the 3rd replay that they showed the angle from the goalpost that definitively showed it wasn't a catch. There was no doubt about it, it wasn't a catch. But I think people, from the time you hear the call to when you see the first couple replays, you're like, oh, wow, ooh, wow, that was right there on the line. Then you see the 3rd one where you're like, oh, okay, he's definitely over.
And yet it had people wanting to change the rules for some reason. Like, well, if you just treated it like baseball and tennis, where when the ball's on the line, it's in, then none of this happens. I'm like, what do you mean none of this happens? Like, nobody, he was out. That's the rule. Why? All of a sudden you want to change the out-of-bounds rule because of this?
They were trying to turn it into the Dez Bryant catch or something. Like, no, this is very, very easy.
On the line, there's nothing ambiguous about it.
And as
Stop.
If there's never any controversy over doing it the other way, you know, where if it's touching somebody, like, okay, you'd be having the same argument about whether a toe was actually inbounds by a minuscule amount if you changed the rules.
Absolutely. So that was the drama at the end of Thursday Night Football. The drama at the end of Friday Night Football, literally on the second to last play of the game, Jordan Love is going to be out for a while because of a knee injury, a sprained MCL that he suffered as he was going to the ground. Jalen Carter of the Eagles was on the ground, kind of kind of got over to Jordan Love's leg and his helmet hit him in the knee. There were a lot of Packer fans out there that were calling Jalen Carter dirty because he hit him in the knee. I don't think it was a dirty play.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't. Not one bit.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but this is a significant injury. This is one of the now one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, where their backup situation is Malik Willis and Sean Clifford. They're right. They're thumbing through for Ryan Tannehill's number right now.
Yeah, yeah, and it was unfortunate. And honestly, the field was sloppy as hell. J.J. Watt explained this well about, and it's something I should have looked into a long time ago because this is my theory, but J.J. with his experience with English soccer obviously understands this. Those fields are built for soccer players who weigh like 103 pounds and yeah. run around. Yeah. They're not built for football players.
Yep.
So, but that didn't have anything to do with the Jordan Love injury either. I think if anything, that like in a situation like that, sloppy field conditions sometimes help you because your foot will slide out instead of getting stuck in the turf.
Mm-hmm.
But it's for a team in the Packers that share a lot of similarities to the Texans with, hey, young quarterback who had a very promising year last year. What's it going to look like this year? It's going to be put on hold for a little bit at least.
Yep.
Well, Jordan Love in that game did still a few of the things that you wonder about if you compare him to C.J. Stroud. Some of his decision-making in critical moments or some of the throws he tries to make is just a little bit dicey. I don't trust his judgment like I trust C.J. Stroud's judgment.
Yeah, yeah. But that division looks like it's going to be pretty good this year. You lose Jordan Love for a month, that could be the difference between playoffs and non-playoffs for them. Sunday Night Football was fun. I mean, we got Matthew Stafford versus Jared Goff in the playoffs last year. The Lions won that one. A rematch in Detroit on Sunday night, and this was a good game, man. This was back and forth the whole way. A lot of good plays on offense, but it was, you know, 20-20 going into overtime, so it was skewed more towards a defensive game. And then in overtime, the Lions just ran over the Rams.
Laporta in motion. Here's the snap. Handoff Montgomery running right into the end zone. Touchdown, Lions. Bowl game, Lions. David Montgomery with a one-yard touchdown run, a walk-off. And the Lions in overtime beat the Rams 26-20. What a way to start the Sunday night schedule here in 2024.
Yeah, I think two teams that are expected to be postseason teams and the Lions. Look, the Lions are the story in the NFC this year, I think. Like, I know that San Francisco is the best team in the NFC.
Yeah.
The Lions and their quest to get to their first Super Bowl ever, I think, is the story in the NFC.
I think one of the biggest stories about the Lions as it relates to the Texans is that, look, you have a head coach in Dan Campbell who is not the offensive brains behind the operation. I always think of him as a defensive-minded head coach, even though he was a tight end and he was an offensive coach, but he's not the architect of that offense. Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator, is the architect of that offense. So in some respects, it's like having a defensive-minded head coach.
Yeah.
Campbell sets the tone and the attitude for the team, and then Ben Johnson takes care of the X's and O's. And they've been able to retain Ben Johnson, even though other teams have shown interest in him as a head coach. Ben Johnson kind of just wants to ride this out and see where the wave takes him, I think.
And pick the right job. He's made
right,
that
pick
very
the right,
clear.
Yes. And I think Bobby Slowick is in a very similar situation. Yeah. So much like with D'Amico Ryans, defensive-minded head coach, but also when it comes to the offense, his influence is setting the tone for what type of a team you are and how you're going to play and compete. That is very similar to what the Lions have. And it's a matter of, all right, let's keep the guy we have running the offense for as long as we can. At some point, you're going to have to change. But it's crazy how similar the path of the Lions and the path of the Texans has been. Other than that, people were very skeptical of Dan Campbell as a head coach when he first came in. Whereas with D'Amico, people have been nothing but positive around the league about
him. Yeah, I think that and the Lions are doing it with an older reclamation project at quarterback. The Texans are doing it with a stud, you know, second year guy. But there are a lot of similarities, no question.
A lot of similarities too. I think just in terms of, I think Lions fans love this team because of that attitude and the grittiness. It just feels like a gritty team.
Yeah.
Aiden Hutchinson, that like after that game, looked like he is a guy that still wanted to go out and kill more dragons. It's that kind of a team, and the Texans have a very similar feel to
Absolutely.
It. Anyway, Lions-Texans Super Bowl. I don't know how good it would be for ratings or whatever, anything else like that. But in terms of narratives, that it would be a really fun Super Bowl, just in terms of the trajectory of these two teams over the past few years.
I think it would draw a big audience. I do, because of the story of neither of these teams ever having been to a Super Bowl. I think there is something compelling to the maybe I'm projecting. I know. If I'm watching a Super Bowl where neither of the teams have won a Super Bowl before, and you know there's going to be one fan base that's going to be going insane after this thing, you know, is compelling to me. They play each other in Week 10. That's my favorite game on the schedule. It has been all year. It's Lions Texans Sunday Night Football.
Before you lock in a bet on a football game, you like to look at a picture of the head coach and the quarterback?
A face picture, yeah.
Yeah, you like to look at the headshots. I remember I had a hard time in the Aggies one because Elko looks a little too much like Bill O'Brien for my liking. I kept saying, like, no, he looks more like Bruce Arians. But, I think, D'Amico and CJ versus Jared Goff and Dan Campbell.
That's pretty close, man.
I think the Texans, based on quarterback, I think the Texans win that headshot challenge.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Jared Goff looks a little overwhelmed. Campbell is a solid face shot, though. You know what I mean?
Like, Campbell looks like a guy that commands confidence.
Dude,
he just looks like a football coach. D'Amico, same thing. Yeah. Like, especially if the neck is prominently featured.
Yep.
They're both built like they could still be playing in the NFL.
Yeah, that should be overtime. If that game goes to overtime, let's just go by the rules that D'Amico and Dan Campbell just throw down at midfield, and whoever wins, that's who wins the game.
And it's linebacker versus tight end.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Oh, that would be cool.
It'd be great.
Oklahoma drill.
Yes, 100%. So that's the on-field drama we got in Week 1. We got off-field drama in Week 1 too, man. Within like 10 minutes of each other on Sunday, we got Tyreek Hill getting a moving violation on his way to the game.
Yeah.
Which at the time, Seth, when you and I were discussing that, because it happened right in the middle of the pregame show for the Texans, so you and I, you know, kind of broke that news to the audience, and we were talking about it for a little bit. At the time, what we did not know, obviously we didn't know what the exchange was between the officers and Tyreek Hill, because the body cam footage had not come out yet. I didn't realize that Jonnu Smith was in the car in front of Tyreek, and Calais Campbell was on the scene. Calais Campbell ended up getting cuffed at one point in this thing.
Well, and that's the interesting thing to me, is that Calais Campbell is like the elderly statesman,
yes,
the consummate and maturity and all of that stuff. That was the part that was kind of shocking to me and raised my eyebrows. Like, okay, what did Calais Campbell do?
He's been the Walter Payton man of the year.
Yeah, like, I was like, wait a minute. Like, okay, something's askew here.
Yeah.
At the time we said, look, wait till the body cam footage comes out, all that. Regardless of getting into a debate about all of the things surrounding, I think two things. One, had Darlington not report? Darlington, when he initially reported that, made it sound like Tyreek Hill was driving a lot differently than how I've seen it described in the report.
Initial report said he was like weaving through a cone or something like
that.
Yeah, like,
so
was,
I don't know what the.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, just as far as how the Dolphins have responded to this, I think this is one that I think it congealed in a lot of ways for them. So where it might be a distraction or what have you, how the Dolphins have responded to this as a team and by Mike McDaniel, I think that this will ultimately be something that's not a distraction, if anything, might be I hate to call it a positive for them, but it's like a
rallying point.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be the distraction that you might have speculated.
No, I listened to the show before ours on the way in, and they're talking about like how this could be the thing that gets them. Like they're taking this incident with Tyreek Hill and somehow lumping it into a Super Bowl conversation. Like,
this might be
the thing that gets that bunker mentality. Like, okay. I mean, they're not facing the Miami PD in the Super Bowl. They are facing, the Detroit Lions or somebody, but we'll see. Dak Prescott's extension came down during the pregame show. So we got a massive contract extension to a quarterback. The quarterback market got reset significantly during Week 1 of the season. So that's something, and that's, something Texan fans will be keeping an eye on a couple years from now with CJ.
It's something that you and I are going to argue about too, just in the offseason, because I think that Brock Purdy will get the Dak Prescott contract, whereas you were very skeptical of that.
Yeah, I'm skeptical that he'll get it. We'll see. We need to put a bet on it of some sort, some dinner bet or something. We'll do a dinner bet.
I'll bet $5,000 right now that he gets at least the same as Dak Prescott.
I bet him 5 G's.
Would you accept IOUs, Flexi, by the way, payment?
Along those lines, this is funny. And by the way, we got another Deshaun Watson lawsuit in week one. So that's all of our drama inventory here. That's pretty good. Three significant endings to primetime games plus three huge off-the-field storylines in week one is pretty good. We were talking earlier about the salary cap and the Browns and how they're just screwed salary cap-wise for the next few years. Text message, and I think this person's serious. Why can't you just cut a guy, and while the player still gets paid his guaranteed money, it no longer counts against the cap?
Right. It's a fair question, because it's like the salary cap, if you don't know anything about it, it can be complicated. Basically, because the rules are what they are right now, because otherwise a team like the Cowboys could say, all right, we'll give you a $200 million signing bonus.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't work out, then the Cowboys face no repercussions from it. So the cash-rich teams would just basically have a free license to spend as much money as they want with zero repercussions from it at all. That's an extreme example, obviously, but that's the basic reason that the rule is the way it is.
This guy's basically just saying, why can't the Browns just cut him and then they're not on the hook for the salary the next 2 years on the cap? This is a person who's been through a bankruptcy. I am firmly believe this is a, why can't we just spend on our credit card and then when the time comes around for the bill to be paid, we just walk away from the bill.
Well, I mean, but even then, it's on your credit for the next 7 years. At least there are repercussions to it, you know, with a bankruptcy.
It's not a perfect analogy.
Yeah, you can't wipe the slate clean, because then the cash-rich teams can just do whatever the hell they want with no limitation, no checks or balances.
Yeah, and they can just promise money to guys in future years and then let them walk and like, oh, all right, no cap ramifications. Here's your check. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's why.
It would basically be like having no salary cap at all. It would just,
It's easily circumventable. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Wednesday. Texans are 1-0 right now, man. A chance to do something that has not been done in 8 seasons, and a segment that we are fortunately kept out of, thanks to the Texans being 1-0. We will talk about that, tell you what it is coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Hard to believe, man, but if the Texans are able to beat the Bears on Sunday, they're 7-point favorites right now, so they should beat the Bears on Sunday at home. Sunday Night Football, you can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. If they're able to do that, Seth, this will be the first time since 2016 that the Texans start a season 2-0. That's wild to think.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Because I know it hasn't been perfect over those 8 years. Not sure if you've noticed, but there have been some good years and some bad years. But they've not gotten off to a 2-0 start since the Brock Osweiler season. Brock Osweiler, despite the quarterback play that's been in some years very, very good here since Brock Osweiler, still not able to get off to a 2-0 start. But old Brockaroo got off to a 2-0 start back in 2016.
Yeah. The Brock Osweiler experience, one that I just love and enjoy reliving.
It was fun
every
for two games. I will say that I enjoyed.
There have been times with the Texans during the Bill O'Brien era where they were doing things on paper that looked good, and yet you could just tell, including the 9-game win streak they had in 2018, where I can just. I remember, you know, some people being offended, some like players or coaches on the Texans being offended that they weren't being acknowledged for having this 9-game win streak. But there was just such a flukish run and so much random stuff that happened during the 9-game win streak that you could tell it wasn't Sherman's march to the sea.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, they weren't taking the league by storm.
Yeah.
It was nice and it was cool that they had rallied back from starting off 0-3, but it just didn't feel quite the same way. I feel like if the Texans, especially if they clean up some of the sloppiness from game one, if the Texans have a convincing victory, just to, you know, slam the door shut on the Bears at home in a primetime game, it feels like a different 2-0 than the Brock Osweiler year, obviously.
Yeah, this is where we got to remind ourselves. The fact of the matter is, as much love as the Texans have been getting this offseason, largely driven by the star power they brought into the building and the fact that people love their quarterback and their coach, the nation has not gotten to see a lot of the D'Amico Ryan, C.J. Stroud era. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's that, you know, the Colts game last year was the first game where they had the stage to themselves, the Week 18 Colts game. And then, obviously, the playoff game in Cleveland made a real impression. I think that's probably those two games, the fact that those are the first two times the Texans had the stage to themselves all year, and they were such impressive wins. Like, I know it was a close game with the Colts, but a young team like that, that hasn't been in a situation like that in a long time as a franchise to go get that win against Indy, and then dominating the Browns kind of carried the offseason. But the nation, by and large, has not seen a lot of the Ryan's Stroud edition of the Texans, you know?
Yeah, and I think that there's I can sense, too, even though for the most part the love for C.J. Stroud or the admiration for C.J. Stroud's rookie year has been pretty universal as it can get in modern days, I think that there is still more of an appreciation of C.J. Stroud by the NFL quarterbacks who are in the media now, or the former coaches, or what have you, because it's not necessarily highlight real stuff.
Right.
It's more just what he was able to do with the decision-making and a lot of those things. And then, yes, the big primetime games at the end of the year or in the playoffs where he had the jaw-dropping numbers, especially versus the Browns, who were a very good defense last year. I think that this is where people will start to see just C.J. Stroud operating and understand some of the finer aspects of it. A lot of people that didn't watch a single Texans game in real time last year can see with it. It's the week-in, week-out stuff that's really impressive.
Yeah. 2-0 would be nice, man. Nice little start. I haven't looked to see who the other AFC South teams are playing this weekend. But Texans in first place 1 week in.
Well, we have what's Thursday night football? Oh, it's Bills versus Dolphins.
Bills Dolphins this weekend. Yep, it's Bills Dolphins. Now, the one thing that is nice that they won the game is I'm looking at an article on ESPN.com right now, and they're doing it on TV, too, at the same time. The panic or patience meters here for all the teams that either had, you know, bad quarterback play or lost their games unexpectedly, like the Bengals. Do you think, what would the panic meter be on the Texans if they, let's say Joe Mixon gets stuffed on 3rd and 3, and the Colts get the ball back and they drive down and they get a game-winning field goal, especially if there's another big chunk play involved in it from Anthony Richardson?
Right.
What would we be feeling and saying this week leading into the Bears game?
We would say, all right, this isn't a championship defense.
Yeah.
And I think and we can still say that.
Right.
The Texans defense and the way they played on Sunday was just too much like the Texans defense we saw last year, where, yeah, they're doing some really, really good things. The Texans run defense last year was actually very respectable, for instance, and it was respectable in the game on Sunday. It was really good in the game on Sunday. But it's the big plays. It's that you've got these coverage issues and you're allowing big plays, and that's exactly what we saw last year, that they've got to get that ironed out. If the Texans had botched that game, I don't think we'd be... So if the Texans had lost the game, I don't think we'd be as worried about the blocked punt, because the Texans special teams have been very good consistently, including in 2021 and 2022.
For sure.
I don't think we're as worried about that. We're worried about the big plays on the defense. And I am currently worried about the big plays that the Texans allowed on defense.
Yeah, I am too. I definitely am. I think, you know, if the game had played out the way I just illustrated right there, I think I'd be just as concerned that they couldn't pick up the 3rd and 3 at the end of the game, that they had to give the ball back. You know, that to me, because that is my favorite takeaway from the Colts game. Out of all the good stuff that happened in that game, there's a lot of good, there was some bad. But the thing that has me feeling the best is when they needed to close the game, they closed the game. There were so many of those close games last year, Seth, that ended with the defense having to make the play at the end of the game. Jimmy Ward has to make an interception. Steven Nelson has to make an interception. They got to knock a ball down against the Cardinals. You know, because the offense couldn't stay on the field in the fourth quarter because they couldn't run the football when they needed to run the football. That would be the thing for me. Like if they had to give the ball back to the Colts, it'd be like, all right, cool rushing offense for the first 3.5 quarters, but when the other team knows you need to run the football, you weren't able to get it done. But they were able to get it done. So it's good.
I haven't even really done the experiment yet to really try to put myself in the position, okay, if the Texans lose that game in the fashion that you just laid out, would I be the calm, cool, and collected one right now, or would I be the one that's like, this is what happens when you have guys that don't show up in training camp, when you don't address the safety position in the offseason? That's probably the one. Was all right, Jimmy Ward did not have a great game when it came to the big plays. You have to credit Anthony Richardson with making some of those throws too.
Sure.
It's not like Jimmy Ward was so far out of position or had gotten toasted so bad. Part of it was that Anthony Richardson made great plays, but does Justin Simmons perhaps make a play on those balls? I would worry about that. But Kalen Bullock played 25 snaps in that game, and I'll be surprised if he doesn't get more than 25 snaps in this next game. Well, I think that they really like Kalen Bullock, and that Kalen Bullock is really showing that they had a good assessment on him so far.
Dude, 100%. They love Kalen Bullock over there. They love Kalen Bullock. And we should contextualize the 25 snaps, because some people may go, 25 snaps, that's not a lot. The Colts only had 45 snaps.
So
Kalen Bullock played over half the snaps defensively in that game.
That's a frustrating thing about that win is that's a pretty good indication of how dominating the Texans were physically on both sides of the ball. The fact that the Colts only had 45 plays in that game.
Right.
By the way, as a defensive player, man, when you only have 45 snaps in a game, you feel like you didn't play a game at all. It's awesome. You're so fresh after a game. You kind of feel like especially a guy like Will Anderson, probably feels like you kind of want to go out and run some wind sprints just to get some of the energy out of you so you can sleep well that night. Well, it's a nice, in terms of staying healthy for the entire season, as many times as you can hold the offense to 45 plays as possible, it pays dividends at the end of the
year. Does that factor into this Sunday's game for you at all, like the carryover effect from that, or is it still too early in the season for that to be
I think it's probably too early in the season.
Yeah.
If anything, I might be like, I wish they'd gotten some more reps to get fine-tuned.
And for Will and Daniil, I mean, they're both obviously really good team guys and unselfish players. If I'm either of them, especially early in the season, I'm like, kind of would rather play 65 snaps and maybe get a chance to get, you know, a sack and a half or something like that here. Fewer snaps, fewer sacks.
My honest play on Daniil Hunter was I just love the fact that twice in a row he's got Anthony Richardson, nervously kind of flexing the fingers in his throwing hand because Daniil got a piece of his throwing hand.
So for the
injury-prone Anthony Richardson, those might have been, through the course of the season, it's a little stuff like that where Anthony Richardson he very rarely finishes football games. That's what he does. Good for him for finishing that football game.
Good job, Anthony Richardson. Second time in his career.
They did only have 45 snaps. Yeah, let's see how he does with 70 snaps in a game.
Baby steps. Yeah. Someone texts in, here's the AFC South slate for Sunday. Obviously, Texans-Bears on Sunday Night Football, a game you can hear on Sports Radio 610. Colts are at the Packers. That's just like the Colts to catch Malik Willis at quarterback for the Packers. That sucks. Jets-Titans. So the Titans have the Jets at home. I think the Jets get back on track in that one.
Titans defense looked pretty damn good, though.
It did look
versus Caleb Williams. So that's Aaron Rodgers. If that Titans defense plays the same way they did against Sean, wait until you see. I'm going to send you some clips later of the Bears interior offensive line. Oh my god!
Yes, send.
It was disgusting. Okay. I told you earlier. It was like they were. It was like they were wearing clown shoes with galoshes on the clown shoes.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was really, really bad. And I don't know if it's because the Titans made them look that way or if they're that genuinely bad.
Colts, Packers. So Colts catch a backup quarterback. Jets, Titans. So the Jets catch Will Levis. And the worst one is the Jags are at the Browns. and they catch the worst quarterback in football, Deshaun Watson. So Texans need to win, man. Got to win. Well, Texans get Caleb Williams, who is no great shakes. Boy, that is a that is a interesting slate of quarterbacks right there.
The quarterback. Okay, so the quarterbacks that we looked at in terms of the formidable roster of quarterbacks the Texans will face this season.
Yeah.
I included Anthony Richardson in that because even if Anthony Richardson is horrible as an NFL quarterback, on any given Sunday, he's going to scare the hell out of you like he did the Texans. But Jordan Love and his injury comes into play.
We'll
now.
See. Let's factor that. This kind of plays into what I want to talk about in the next segment, the quarterback stock market out there. How's it looking for the Texans after week one? Our quarterback looks great. We look like a blue chipper. How's the rest of the schedule and some of the quarterbacks we're interested in looking? It's kind of funny. We'll get a laugh. You'll get a chuckle. It's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Yeah, we were going through the week one storylines earlier in the show, the drama that came out of week one. Derwin texted in and pointed out, yeah, that Thursday night game where Isaiah Likely looked like he scored the touchdown, if it had counted, John Harbaugh was going for two. That would have been.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He had already said he has a. They showed the shot of him on the sideline saying
right away. Right away. I think we're going to see more and more coaches doing that. I think, like, I D'Amico Ryans was aggressive in his kind of game script with the fourth down going forward and going for two as early in the game as he did. Like,
I think it always boils down to depending on what the game flow is. If the game flow has been that, all right, you're the team that's been taking it to the other team physically in the fourth quarter, and you were the team that was coming back, so you're winning the physical battles, then I always feel like, all right, we'll take it to overtime. But if it's been kind of a coin flip type of game, then make it a coin flip right now.
Absolutely.
Get home, you know, just load management, whatever. Just let's do it right now.
Yeah, for sure. So the Athletic has their quarterback kind of stock market, their week two quarterback rankings, and these aren't just based solely on the performance in week one. It's a combination of what we know about that quarterback plus how they performed in week one. For example, Joe Burrow is still fifth on their list, even though he was hot garbage on Sunday against the New England Patriots. By Joe Burrow standards, hot garbage.
Well, but he was kind of, you know, working his wrist a little bit. You know, we had that off-season surgery, which people are saying is no big deal, but like, all right.
There's a few doctors I've read who have pointed out, like, that might be a bigger deal than people are making out of it, that surgery.
The what's his name there? The sports medicine doc that we had on.
Chow? Dr. Chow.
Yeah, Dr. Chow has said that people are making a lot out of it because no quarterback has come back from this specific surgery and injury before, but it's because, but it doesn't mean that it's just quarterbacks haven't been in that same situation. I think with Burrow, you got to look at the entirety of, okay, man, it's one thing after another.
Oh, yeah.
It's always something with Burrow. Even an appendix. Like, it has nothing to do with football.
I couldn't remember.
Like, obviously, an appendix shouldn't be something that hurts you. And yet, it's just one more thing with Joe Burrow.
I knew it was a regular person thing that had. I knew he had the wrist and the knee and the calf and everything else.
Yeah.
I'm like, he had a regular person thing. What? I was going to say mono, but that was Sam Darnold had mono that one time.
Right.
Yeah.
I am, with quarterbacks, I am very unforgiving and probably irrational, but there is something about it with quarterbacks where I'm like, it's not, you can't continually cite injuries as a problem. They're either a guy that can play through injuries and do it really well, or they can't. Roethlisberger was injured all the time. He was dramatic about it, and yet he was able to play through the injuries. Quarterbacks who miss time continually due to injury are either injury prone or not tough enough to play through injuries. And either one is bad. So I never use an excuse for quarterbacks.
CJ played through a shoulder all last year.
Yeah, he had a separated shoulder.
Yeah.
People didn't even talk about it after the first week that he came back.
Right, right. CJ, by the way, in these QB rankings, third. Up from 7-3 after 1 week. It's Mahomes, Allen, then CJ. Now, I will say this. Quarterback play in week one and passing offenses in general, this was a bad week one. Like, there are a lot of teams that are treating training camp with, you know, very, like, I don't want to say disdain. They're not treating it super seriously. Like, oh, when the regular season gets here, we'll be fine. if the passing offenses in week one are any sort of indicator of that, maybe they should have done some more stuff in training camp, some of these teams, you know?
Yeah, I don't, man. The load management is one thing, and health is paramount when it comes to whether or not you win or lose games. But there's something to be said for just there's only 17 games.
Yeah.
And being rusty for the first two games, you got to find the right balance between load management and actually being a good football team. God,
the bottom third-ish of this quarterback ranking with The Athletic just lends itself to so much pettiness in a good way. We can be a petty show.
Let's be petty,
yeah,
Sean.
You ready? 19, Derek Carr.
I'm just pissed off.
Derek Carr.
Now
he's 19, but they won. He's 19th on this list, but they did win 47 to 10, but it was against the Carolina Panthers. That doesn't really count.
But the Panthers, who had a very respectable defense last year, as we saw firsthand.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. 20th on here, Anthony Richardson, who, as you said before, I was told by Colts fans out there, hey, look at our guy versus your guy in this game.
Right, yeah. Like, if you're trying to win the highlight reel battle,
that's
then
your
yes.
guy, dude.
The Colts won. The Colts are, they're ranked number one in the league, I think, probably based on QB highlights. But
yes.
Everything Anthony Richardson has done since he's gotten to the league is exactly like his scouting report, which is surreal upside, but very, very poor consistency with his accuracy. He's capable of making incredibly accurate throws. He just doesn't do it consistently enough, and he's been very, very injury prone. So there was nothing about week one to the of Anthony Richardson's performance that made me feel like, oh yeah, he's going to overcome all of the negatives on his scouting report.
Yep. 21, Caleb Williams, this week's opponent. 23.
He looked awful, man. Caleb Williams looked awful.
Yeah.
And I'm giving him a bit of a pass because it's his first start. The offensive line was atrocious, but, he did not look, he looked very much like a rookie, and the play calling didn't help him out at all. He's back there in gun, not running RPOs or anything, just they're acting like he's going to be like Tom Brady sitting back there in gun, carving up defenses, and he's not that guy yet.
No. That's what I like though on this power ranking. 21, Caleb Williams, this week's opponent. 23, these are quarterback power rankings. 23, Sam Darnold, next week's opponent in Minnesota. Yeah. 26, Jacoby Brissett, week six opponent. So three of the next five opponents for the other two are Trevor Lawrence here and Josh Allen here.
I've seen too much of Jacoby Brissett versus the Texans for me
That's
to
fair.
Ever gloat over him being Jacoby Brissett.
Totally fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jacoby Brissett is like a T.Y. He's like a free agent T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
If all you want to do is beat the Texans, then be sure Jacoby Brissett is your bridge or backup quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah.
He goes from town to town beating the Texans on a
I will never, ever, ever. As far as I'm concerned, Jacoby Brissett is the best quarterback in the league right
he is,
now.
He's
I'm not going to say a single damn thing about Jacoby Brissett.
That's fair. 27, Bo Nix. We hate him, but we really hate Sean Payton more.
I hate Bo Nix a little bit because of all the praise people were heaping on him in the preseason, where when you go, I went and watched Bo Nix. I watched every single one of his snaps from the preseason, and that was the classic, like, okay, yeah, you can get away with that now, but my God, dude, you are all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, your footwork is incredibly slipshod. You're taking chances and risks that you shouldn't. And people have made excuses for him in this last week, but you saw a lot of the same stuff in the preseason. It's going to be a bit of a slow burn with Bo Nix. He has very good upside, but he's got a lot of stuff to clean up.
Yep. Let's see. 28, Bryce Young.
What's up, guys? How we doing? Everyone good?
He's 28.
Bryce Young was
he was garbage in week one, and that goes to show you how bad the league is right now, as there's still guys like five guys below him on this thing.
Bryce Young is that guy in any war movie you've watched where the new lieutenant is a kid who's fresh faced right out of West Point, and he's like taking over a company full of like grizzled dudes who have been in World War II for 3 years at this point. Every single non-commissioned officer knows way more about how to run a war than this kid. But he's a good kid, you know?
Yeah.
He's nice to old ladies.
Right,
He's like first in his class at West Point, but he is just not the guy for this situation.
He's polite.
Yeah.
He clearly has a nervous tic that makes you feel for him a little bit, where he's scratching his arm all the time.
But he's going to get killed by his own troops at some point.
He
they're going to roll a grenade under his bunk.
He's going to walk up to his troops.
What's up, guys? How we doing? Everyone good?
Yep. Yeah, Like,
hey, fellas,
yeah.
Just remember, we're doing it for the cause. Remember the cause.
Like mid-sentence.
Hey, why are your guys' uniforms so dirty? I just see you should take more pride in your appearance.
Can I just tell you, 29 is Daniel Jones, and I had not seen his pick six until 5 minutes ago on TV in here.
Yeah.
The one he threw to, I think, to the Van Ginkle, that linebacker from that was Jalen Petrie pick six esque. That one. That was horrific. Just
doing the kind of stuff. I feel, again, Daniel Jones kind of like Bryce Young. I just kind of feel bad for him. I feel like they're one of these guys that good things happen to, not actually because they've done anything, but because they're solid dudes and everything, and yet the people that are responsible for putting him there are the ones that really deserve the scrutiny and this criticism, and that's why I'm happy that I'm guessing Joe Shane's going to have to start carrying around he's going to have to start traveling with personal security detail.
Dude.
Because he spent the whole offseason snowing his own owner, telling the people in his building that we can't keep Saquon Barkley because we have to find out if the guy that I just paid is not the guy that you all know he is. You know? I mean, really. It just, again, except in this instance, Joe Shane is like a four-star general.
Yeah.
And not just a lieutenant
right.
fresh out of West Point.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's so nice not to be one of these teams. Deshaun Watson, 30. Will Levis, 31. Will Levis, congratulations. You're below Deshaun Watson on these quarterback rankings.
Nice. Will Levis, I just feel like anybody that was trying to have the smart take about how, no, he actually did some really good things last year. You're deluding yourself.
Yep.
You're trying way too hard to sound like the smart guy here. He was, I saw all I needed to see out of Will Levis, and I'm guessing that most of the Titans players saw everything they needed to see out of Will Levis last year, too.
Yep. Lost by the Astros last night, but I think one good thing to come out of this as the postseason approaches that we can pull from last night's game, we'll tell you what that is coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.